we'll begin this hearing. We'll take care of the minutes when we have a quorum. Welcome to the House Agriculture Rural Development Finance Committee. Today we're going to be hearing from the Department of Agriculture as they convey to us the features of the governor's supplemental budget recommendations. So without further ado, I'd like to invite the department down to begin their presentation. And it looks like Ms. Leshner is going to lead off. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Becky Leshner. I'm with the Department of Agriculture. And today before you, we have the governor's supplemental budget reduction of 3%, and we also have the increase for the gypsy moth program, the invasive species program. And we will also be presenting four dedicated fee increases that we are requesting. We have several people here to present on some of the fees and also on the gypsy moth. Leading off with the 4% budget reduction. As you're aware, on your tracking sheet, our 3% is equal to $497,000 in the governor's supplemental budget. This is a reduction in operating expenses only. It does not include grants, aids, or payments to individuals or loans.
So, excuse me, Ms. Leshner, the reduction is 3%?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
We are currently meeting internally to discuss various options that we will be wanting to utilize in this biennium. So currently we are reviewing current budgets to determine how to do these administrative reductions without severely impacting programs. We're also, from there we'll begin discussions for the next biennium. And we're asking that we be allowed the time to refine and review the final plan, which of course will be presented next year in our next budget session. The Commissioner's Office continues to meet on this reduction and the impact it will have on our agency. Madam Chair, with your permission, would you like to hear Gypsy Moth, the Invasive Species Initiative, next?
That would be fine, Ms. Leshner.
Mr. Caruso, if you'll join me, please.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Friesel.
Thank you, Representative Hart. Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Greg Kosicki, and Mr. Friesel is going to be giving a short presentation that will kind of describe the overall program and what we're dealing with. While gypsy moth is certainly one of the concerns, the overall concern actually for the state of Minnesota is invasive species, and Mr. Friesel oversees that program. Invasive species deals with a number of pests, and I think he'll be able to explain that, and then after that, Madam Chair, we can stand for questions if the committee desires.
Thank you, Mr. Bozicki. Would you proceed, Mr. Friesel?
Thank you, Representative Carter. I just have a very few short slides to illustrate our concern about invasive species. And just basically, invasive species is really any non-native animal, plant, or pathogen that has a negative economic or environmental impact on the state. And some examples include soybean rust or gypsy moth, emerald ash borer, or even Ralstonia, which is a bacterial blight. But the one that's probably garnered the most attention has, in fact, been gypsy moth. And 2 years ago, we had a very large eradication in Minneapolis. It's a front that's moving very quickly towards us. And in the coming year, we are anticipating two additional treatments in Minnesota. This is the map that's probably the most alarming to us as we prepare for the arrival of gypsy moth. And if you see the two dotted lines going through western Wisconsin, that's kind of the action zone or the treatment front where there's a very active federal and state efforts to eradicate pockets of gypsy moth. And you'll notice in the extreme southeast corner of Minnesota, that line just moved over and now catches a piece of Minnesota. So that is a new development just within the last couple of months. So that has very much alarmed us that front is moving so quickly towards us. The second major concern that's happened with gypsy moth, and this is just last year, we had four instances where stock was artificially introduced into Minnesota from eastern nurseries. And these were stock that was contaminated with gypsy moth egg masses or gypsy moth larvae. They came to the four nurseries in Minnesota, and then from there they were further redistributed to points. And this map shows the points that we've been able to track through Minnesota. And we are fortunate to detect this these introductions through our trapping program. And it's going to take a huge amount of effort for us to follow up on these artificial introductions. As terrible as gypsy moth is, it's something that is going to come to Minnesota, and it's going to be messy, and it's going to be nasty, and it's going to just add to the list with mosquitoes and ticks. But what is really frightening, as some of you have heard about emerald ash borer, and this is a new insect that was discovered in Detroit. It's a native of China. It is an insect that kills ash trees. It just doesn't just gnaw them and make them messy. It actually kills the trees. And in the Detroit area, it's estimated that anywhere between 5 and 7 million trees are already dead or dying. The nursery industry estimates the loss just in the Detroit area alone to be $10 million. And the state of Michigan has spent about $6 million in 2003 and expects to spend about $20 million in 2004 in eradication efforts. And then the federal government are being asked to pony up about $43 million to combat this one. More of an agricultural invasive species is Ralstonia. This is a disease that on two occasions was introduced into the United States, at one time from Kenya, Africa, and a second time from Central America on geranium cuttings. And there were over 2 million geraniums that came to the United States, and several thousands of them came into Minnesota. And we were able to track down these geranium cuttings and destroy these plants. And in fact, it was just a few weeks ago that the last destructions took place. This is a concern, not just simply because it attacks geraniums, but it's a disease that affects potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, and a number of other crops.
Mr. Friesel, how is the liability issue handled on, say, a nursery has a whole greenhouse full of cuttings from an infected plant, and it all needs to be destroyed? How is that handled?
Representative Harder, that's a very good question. In the case of Ralstonia, the supplier of the products compensated for the loss of these cuttings. So the importer of these plants ended up paying for the replacement of those plants.
Thank you.
Another agricultural example is carnal bunt, and this is in wheat. It's a disease that's just recently found in southern U.S. It's really not so much a problem as far as a yield or direct economic impact, but it has a huge quarantine significance because European countries will refuse to buy wheat in counties that have been shown to have carnal bunt. And then a real quick last one. This just came up just yesterday, in fact. We've been tracking a disease called sudden oak death. It's been found in northern California, southern Oregon. It kills oak trees, but it's been found to exist on nursery stock. A number of counties were quarantined in that area, but late Friday it was found in a large nursery in southern California. And we've done some database searches and found that there's 127 Minnesota sites that received stock from this this nursery company, which we are following up on. So this is another just a kind of a real-time example of one of the threats to the state of Minnesota. And that's kind of my overview.
Mr. Friesel, on the gypsy moth, you're reporting having just recently discovered movement into southeastern Minnesota. How is that observed?
Representative Harder, each year the Department of Agriculture places a grid of traps throughout the eastern part of the states. We set about 15,000 traps. And based on that annual trapping, we are able to get a very accurate picture of where the front is for gypsy moth, or if there's pockets that are starting to develop in a particular area. So that's how we were able to determine in the southeast part of the state.
Mr. Friesel, in the area of soybean aphids, what can you tell us to expect this growing season? Are there any indicators as to the potential damage this year?
Representative Harder, that's a good question. It's always difficult. It's really dependent really on the spring weather conditions as how well they overwinter. We've had a bumper crop of soybean aphids, unfortunately. My personal opinion is that we will very likely have a very good population of soybean aphids again, but it's really a bit early to tell for sure.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What effect will the multitude of Asian beetles that we have on the aphids? Will that have any effect? I know that in my kitchen I have plenty of beetles, but no aphids.
Mr. Friesel.
Representative Harder, that's a good question. It's a good example of multiple invasive pests that have come into the state. Soybean aphid overwinters on buckthorn, which is another invasive species. And so because of the buckthorn, we've had a huge increase in the aphids. And then years ago, these ladybugs were introduced as a biological control. And so we had an explosion in the population of host material. And so now the ladybugs population has exploded as well. And it's very much a beneficial insect, but unfortunately it is really causing a lot of problems for homeowners and people, and we get quite a number of calls about it. I should point out that the introduction of these lady beetles, it was a deliberate introduction, but it was done by the U.S. Department of Agriculture back in the early 1900s. The latest one is actually in the 1970s, and they were introduced by USDA for fruit tree production primarily, and then they've just spread naturally. And it's a good example of a biological control that's kind of went out of control.
Thank you, Mr. Friesel. Any further questions? Mr. Bezicki, are we back to you?
Madam Chair, I think in your packet there actually is a multicolored back sheet about the invasives program, and on the back there is a proposed explanation in the lower left-hand corner, I believe, of what we would intend to do with the dollars appropriated. And if Madam Chair, if you have any questions, or if the committee has any questions about what our needs are, we'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, be ready to move on unless you've got questions.
Maybe, Mr. Bezicki, just a brief outline of how the money is used.
Madam Chair, one of the things that we learned when we did the spraying in South Minneapolis several years ago is that the key to the success was working with local units of government and the citizens about whatever type of pest or problem that we're dealing with. There is a great deal of information, education that needs to get out, so we'd be looking at having somebody who was an expert in communications help us with that. It greatly helped when we had to treat in South Minneapolis, and whether we're talking about diseases like Ralstonia eventually affecting potatoes, or gypsy moth affecting all of the trees in the entire state. It's very helpful to get somebody who's an expert in communications, getting the word out with our partners, what people should do and how they should react and so forth. We also are in great need of a research scientist. That person would be doing field work as well as working in the laboratory, identifying samples that get sent in by citizens, by local foresters. I'm sure all of your districts, all of your communities have foresters. They are partners in these kinds of projects, and so we'd be looking at some scientific expertise. We also would like to get some additional people out in the field working on specific projects, such as tracking down where those trees that were infested or that were came from the potentially infested nurseries were sold to, track down the breach, and then, of course, we need some supplies and administrative support and so forth. So I hope that's of some help, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Bozicki, are there federal dollars for this program as well?
Madam Chair, there are federal dollars. We have federal partners in the Forest Service and USDA APHIS who are very helpful both in providing technical support and some forest dollars. We very aggressively go after grants and dollars that can help us. So we do have some of that in our budget. With the inclusion, if you recall from the map that Mr. Friso showed, there's now that we are actually in this STS control area by that line that goes to through two of our southern counties, we also have become members of a nonprofit organization called the STS, or Slow the Spread Foundation. They deal with federal dollars that are provided to this nonprofit to deal with the nine states that are right on the front of dealing with gypsy moth. Those dollars are used for gypsy moth management alone. So we aggressively go after all federal dollars or nonprofit dollars where we can. So we are augmented, but it is we still have needs that we are bringing to you this year.
Representative Penna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are these invasive species adequately managed and controlled on our vast amount of state land? Because we do notice differences in our crops, be it close to state land or even with CRP and other programs.
Mr. Bozicki.
Madam Chair, Representative Pettis, overall I would have to say no, because I'm sure certainly there are situations and examples where we have problems. Last year, as you recall, we had to come forward with a very difficult bill to reduce some of our efforts in dealing with noxious weeds, and that's when you mentioned state lands and invasive species, that's the first thing I think of. We do have very good partners with our other state agencies, especially the DNR, but I couldn't actually speak to whether absolutely everything is being managed. And there are invasive plant pests are a huge problem and a growing problem with the mobility of individuals and the commercial industry these days.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Madam Chair, I know Mr. Fitch from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association wanted to speak to this portion of the bill. I'm not sure if this would be something that you want to deal with now or later. But
that would be fine. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Fitch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bob Fitch. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, which is the state's largest green industry trade association. Our members include nursery and greenhouse growers, garden centers, landscape contractors, other landscape professionals. Collectively, our industry's small family-owned companies contribute $2.1 billion annually to our state's economy. And I would just like to offer support to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and thank them for proposing this initiative, and for Governor Pawlenty's staff and the governor for advancing it to you. And I urge your support. With gypsy moth, sudden oak death, emerald ash borer, Asian longhorn beetle, and a host of other potential threats that are many of them attributable to the increase in international trade and increasing interstate trade. Not since Dutch elm disease has our urban forest and related environment faced such dire threats. environmentally damaging invasives. It might appear that our industry is primarily responsible, but it's not. Certainly, there's potential for movement of these pests through the nursery trade, but they're also spread by travelers, by wildlife, by poor land management. I would also like to emphasize this is a statewide threat. Areas in southeast Minnesota and in the Duluth area are particularly susceptible to the movement of gypsy moth right now, and of course the Twin Cities area as well. To do our part in controlling these threats, the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association worked with MDA and advocated for an improved nursery inspection program during the 2000 legislature, and our industry is proud to do our part in paying for an effective regulatory program run by MDA. For many of our members, their nursery inspection certificate fees have doubled in the past year, and we're not happy, but we're ready to pay the price to make sure that we're not the threat factor, that we're not the problem. And I want to thank all of the legislators here in this room for your support on that last year. I encourage you to look at the long term, and that's what this initiative is about. The invasive pests we've talked about here today, unfortunately, are probably just the tip of the iceberg. We need to protect Minnesota's environment by supporting ongoing regulation, monitoring and education on invasive insects and plants, and the supplemental appropriation proposal from MDA and Governor Paul Lente is an important part of that. This small investment now will hopefully help the state be better prepared to control any invasive pests better and limit future investments by the state of Minnesota.
Any questions for Mr. Fitch? Thank you, Mr. Fitch.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Leshner.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, our first dedicated fee increase that I'll be talking to you about today is on your sheet is the Market Inspection Authority. Currently, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture does fruit and vegetable market inspections within the state of Minnesota, and we do this under a USDA delegation agreement.
Ms. Leshner, could you pull the microphone closer?
Sorry. Better?
Yes.
Under this agreement, we have also agreed that in times of need, the USDA can call on us to actually do fruit and vegetable inspections outside of the Minnesota borders. A lot of times this is for produce that's actually going to be brought into the Minnesota markets. And in reviewing our laws in conjunction with this delegation agreement, we realize we're kind of a little bit of a conflict. And so we're asking for a technical amendment that will recognize that under the cooperative agreement there are certain other duties that we have to do. For example, when USDA is shorthanded and there's a lot of produce being shipped into our area. What this will allow us to do is actually charge fees for those services that we perform outside the boundaries of the state of Minnesota, which would all obviously recover the cost for the inspections performed.
Ms. Leshner, could you give me an idea of market inspections, more specifically what that is?
When produce is brought into Minnesota, melons, fresh fruit, etc., they're brought in and in the trucks and stuff, and then they're brought into what's called a market inspection point. And it's at that point, or the wholesale point, that we do the inspections to ensure that the fruit is of the quality and quantity that it's supposed to be, that it has the freshness, that it's not rotten or anything else. So this is to ensure the product for our markets.
Thank you. And Ms. Leshner, has the department done any inspection outside the boundaries of the state of Minnesota at this point?
Madam Chair, under the delegation agreement, we have done those, and we want to bring ourselves into compliance between the delegation agreement and our statutes, and that's why we're asking for the technical change. This is something that evidently was overlooked years ago.
This represents an expansion of the definition of the limitations or the limits on what you inspect, and also in includes a fee increase?
We would be actually, Madam Chair, our fees would be the same as we're currently charging, so this is not actually a fee increase. Under the cooperative agreement, which is what we do for fruit and vegetable inspection services, that cooperative agreement establishes what we do within the state of Minnesota. Minnesota law still establishes the standards that we grade the produce to. But this would be for when USDA calls us and said, you know, we need you to come to Des Moines or one of our surrounding states because we've got a very large shipment. So this means that our delegation agreement is no longer can be considered in conflict with the statute. So it's a technical change, even though it will have a cost impact, which is acknowledging the fees that would be charged for that work that is done.
So, Ms. Lesner, going out of state will represent some travel with the example you gave. Will the cost of travel be covered in addition to the cost of inspection?
And I'm sure that is included in the fees that we charge for going. We not only charge time, but we also charge for the mileage charge. So if we're traveling to Des Moines versus if we're traveling to a border town, of course we would be recovering the mileage for that.
Thank you. Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will this, you talked about a delegation, am I correct? There was an agreement.
Madam Chair and Representative Pennis, yes, there is a cooperative agreement between the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Okay, so Representative Pennis.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So does this have any fallout back to us? So we need someone here. Are we going to be paying? We need some inspections here where they need to call in somebody from another state.
Ms. Lesner.
Madam Chair, Representative Pennant, my understanding is when USDA calls us to do this, they are asking to ask what our schedules are and do we have the time. So this is actually where we have the flexibility in our schedules to go do that work, but we're not neglecting Minnesota.
Representative Pennis.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not insinuating that you're neglecting your work. My question is, are we going to have any, let's say that someone has to come to Minnesota to do inspections. Are we then going to be charged? I mean, somebody's going to pay for this. Probably it's the one who buys the head of lettuce, but in the end, but whatever. So that's what I want to know is, you know, if this is, which may be a terrific idea, if it's so terrific, why hasn't it been thought of before? There's no harmful effects to the state.
Ms. Lesner.
Madam Chair, Representative Pennant, my understanding is when USDA calls us because they are having extra large shipments in places in surrounding states, was a lot of the times the produce would have been coming to Minnesota. But rather than to go ahead and break the shipment up and send just that part to Minnesota, we're actually going to go, for example, to Des Moines or something and do that inspection there, not only of the Minnesota, the product that's coming to Minnesota, but to the surrounding states. I also understand that in the cooperative agreement and the relationships that we have with USDA, they also ask what our workload is to make sure that they're not drawing our services from our state when our state has needs of those services. So this is a complementary relationship, and it is something that has been for several years. I'm not quite sure how long, but we were just coming forward this session and looking to acknowledge it in our statute that we do have this cooperative agreement that we work under.
Would you continue, Ms. Lesner?
The next request that we have, which is actually called scale testing. What this is for is, again, in our grain and produce inspection area, specifically our grain inspection area, again, we work under a USDA delegation agreement. And in this delegation agreement, there are certain services that we provide, or that state of Minnesota is to provide. Previously, for the scale testing for the export, which is mainly done in the Duluth area, the Public Service Agency has been performing this. They have now informed us they will no longer be providing this service. So we're looking to ask that our laws acknowledge that we are doing this service, and then the fees for doing this service then are deposited into the grain inspection account, which is a dedicated account. We're also looking at setting those fees and requesting to set those fees so that there is no conflict between our fees and the Department of Public Service. So we would be going with their fee structure for scale testing. This would bring in about $4,000 to the grain inspection account on an annual basis, and the cost for providing these services would be about the same. Madam Chair, with your permission, the next one up is the plant protection export certification fee, and I'd like to recall Mr. Friso to the mic.
Welcome back, Mr. Friso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This provision primarily clarifies some of the language. Last year the legislature passed a major rewrite of our plant protection statutes and our export certification law, and that's the export certification portion is what allows Minnesota to export commodities and plant material both internationally and interstate. This language clarifies that if there is a laboratory analysis required, that the commissioner can set and collect fees in order to cover those costs. And then secondarily, we issue a number of miscellaneous certificates, and these are we've listed in your packet there some examples: European corn borer certificates and heat treatment certificates, and we just do a few hundred of those every year. Change would allow us to charge about $25 per each of these certificates to cover our administrative costs, and it allows us to both set the fee and collect the fee. So it's clarifying the language in that that act. And we estimate our average is we issue about 360 of those miscellaneous certificates each year for a revenue of about $9,000.
Any questions of Mr. Friesland? Thank you.
Madam Chair, for our final dedicated increase is Mr. Granewski from our grain buyers area.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Granewski.
For the record, my name is Jim Granewski. I'm Assistant Director of the Ag Marketing Services Division. There are several fee increases included in this bill that directly affect the grain licensing and auditing fund. Across the board, it's a 10% increase in fees. In addition, we'll be adding a late fee this year, asking to add a late fee this year because of in the past, we've had difficulty getting people to license on time, and they've dragged out continuously. It's kind of a chronic problem we're trying to solve that way. In addition to changing fees, we're also moving some fees from rule to statute. Most of the licensing fees for grain warehouses, the storage fees and licensing fees and examination fees were included in rule and in order to get an increase in revenue and to change those fees, we needed to move those from rule to statute. The first section of the bill, section 9, applies to general merchandise storage warehouses. Our division inspects and licenses these facilities. The next section applies to section 10 applies to grain buyers fees. Again, it's about a 10% increase across the board, and adding a late fee. Section 11 are the fees for grain storage. These include the licensing fees, examination fees. Currently, the statute requires an elevator to pay licensing fees and examination fees at relicensing time. There's a fee for a second examination that's always been included. The statute requires two examinations per year. If the state fire department does the second examination, we do an hourly charge instead of a flat fee. Again, there's a penalty amount if for late payment, late licensing. And finally, the section 12 is the a license fee for grain bank operators. And again, there's late fee charge for that.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ganowski, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I have some questions here. First of all, I always feel very uncomfortable when I don't have a bill in front of me. Is there a chance we could see the bill?
Mr. Ganowski.
Madam Chair, Representative, this is the governor's bill, and I'm not sure what the distribution of it. I'm not sure why you don't have a copy of it.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Scott Masters. I'm from the Department of Finance. I'm not sure about the distribution of the bill yet. I think it's in the governor's office right now. I don't know if it's been given to staff or what, but I think the governor's office has the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Masters. It was apparent that the witness had a copy we weren't having access to, so thank you. Mr. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to be, Madam Chair, correct me, are we going to be voting on this at all, or is this going to be laid over into the Ag Omnibus Bill? Are we going to have some input on it, or?
We won't be voting on it today. Yes, you will have input. What else?
Okay. Madam Chair, yeah. Mr. Granowski, I have always a problem with fees, and generally I'll vote against any fee. I did yesterday in the House floor, and I'll do it again. It's just another way of taxing people, and you're not saying you're taxing, but yet in a way you're taking money out of somebody's pocket. And I see the Department of Agriculture has been moving that way more and more the last number of years, with more fees and more fees and more fees. When I go back home to my district, the farmers do let me know that they've got hit with a whole lot of new fees again. And it's hard for me to answer, and especially when you don't have a bill to look at it and examine it, where you're going and where you've been. But I know we did a lot of fee-oriented stuff last year, and our ag bill's down to about 1/3 of 1%. There isn't very much left. If you take the ethanol out, we have very little left over here. And initiating fees to take care of it is not, I don't believe, the answer. I also have questions in regards to the governor's proposal. The agency proposes using current vacancy and salary savings where possible to meet the reduction of $497,000. How much, I don't know if you can answer the general budget question that I have, how much of it can be covered by vacancies?
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Representative, I'm not in a position to answer that question.
Okay. A follow-up, Madam Chair?
Would you like to hear if Ms. Leshner has an answer?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Ms. Leshner?
Madam Chair, Representative Heigerkin, at this point, the Commissioner's Office continues to meet to review not only current biennium budgets, but what happens in the next 2 years of the biennial budgets, with what happens if we go forward with absolutely no increases or, in this particular case, with a permanent reduction. And so what we've asked for is time to continue that scrutiny to be able to determine what is the best way to meet the governor's 3% budget reduction without severely impacting programs in this current biennium, which will give us time to talk to our constituents about what would be the changes in the next biennium.
Representative Heidgerken.
Madam Chair, well, I sure hope that we do have input as to where the cuts are going to be made, because us as legislators have to go to our back to our districts and defend them. The problem that I foresee coming again is perhaps a cut into the field workers and not in the administrative end of it. I would like to have some input as to if we're going to have to do some cuts, at least have some input of where they should be. Are we going to get some input from the committee here, or are some of these cuts going to be done basically without legislative approval?
Ms. Leshner.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, that is why we're asking for time so that we do have a chance for those conversations. We are sensitive to your constituents' concerns in the areas, and rather than to just come out and say, well, this program or that program is either reduced or down, we want the opportunity, one, to review internally, two, to meet also with industry and also with yourselves, to talk about what is it that we're doing and why we're having to make these very, very hard decisions.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concerns, again, and there were some things done last year that were didn't come out of ag. They came out of the tax bill. And I guess I was at fault for not reading the entire tax bill. I did vote against it last year because of some of the hidden costs. I'm hoping that the cuts to ag will be all in the ag bill this year, and I'm hoping that we don't see something, for example, like extension happening, where I go back to my district and I find out about it there before anybody ever told me that this was going to happen. But anyways, if you're going to come back to us, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Heidgerken, the governor proposes and the legislature disposes. So I think we'll have a chance to hear recommendations and act on them to the best of our ability. Thanks for your concern. Representative Swenson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe you'll partially answer what I was going to say. I guess what I was going to say is, I'll probably ask you too, what your plan is, that you will be bringing us a proposal that we look at and put together as the Ag Committee's budget recommendation versus this is the governor's recommendation, but you and the committee will be putting together our own version. Is that correct? That this is, you know, based partially on the parameters and partially on the governor's recommendation?
That's my understanding, Representative Swenson. We will be given a target, and there will be a recommendation from the governor. We're getting that now, and we'll act as we see appropriate within those limitations. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the witness, I just heard you talk about you've got to take this to the stakeholders, department people, business community, farm community, other groups, and get their input, and on and on and on. What's the time frame for this? I mean, are you doing this in the next week? Is that what you're telling us? Because certainly we're going to make a decision here in about the next week if we're going to meet deadlines in the House. Is that what you're telling us? You're meeting over the next week and you're going to come back with these recommendations?
Ms. Lesner.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, what I'm asking for is because of the short timelines that you allow us the time, and then instead of doing reductions in specific programs in this biennium, we're asking you for to allow us the time to, one, look at what we can do this biennium without severely impacting programs, and two, to be able to have the time and know it will not be in the next week to put together what is the permanent plan for this reduction.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up, because I guess I don't know how the rest of the committee feels, but certainly for my perusal of a supplementary budget bill, and just to follow up with Representative Heigerk, and I had this outlined on mine too, the agency proposes using current vacancy and salary savings where possible to meet this reduction. I want to know which positions aren't going to be filled. I want to know where the salary savings are. In fact, it might be helpful for us to see any salary and benefit increases that administration over at the department and others have had in the last couple of years. As we do our contemplating here, maybe we ought to recognize some of that too, if it occurred. And you know, Madam Chair and committee, I don't know how we can make any decisions on it unless we have some real specifics. We need to know what's not being filled. We need to know which programs aren't going to be in place or fully funded by the end of this biennium, or how can we vote on a budget.
Ms. Lesner.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, I do not have that level of a breakdown for you today. I do not expect to have that level tomorrow or even by the end of next week. That is why we're asking. What is on here on this is one of the things that we are considering, which is what salary savings has previously occurred. Is that something that would be available at this time to be able to utilize without
Representative
Jones. So I'm really trying to get this straight. I'm not trying to be flippant, but a reduction of $497,000, which is 3%, that's what the governor is asking to solve the $160 million hole that we're in right now. Yet we're supposed to just give carte blanche to the department. We're just going to reduce it by 497 and then let you decide over the next year. What is that? Is that the governor's plan? Just to let Commissioner Hugeson and you folks decide where to cut it. We just take the appropriation away and you do the cutting. So again, like Representative Heigerkin says, we have no oversight as to what's going to be cut. We're just going to trust that you'll do it in a manner that we're all acceptable to. Is that what I'm trying to get a read on what this means.
Ms. Lesner.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, what we're trying to ask for is the 3% reduction, which we were told the number, just as you were told the number. We were actually told the day before the forecast came out, so we've had very little time also. Knowing that we need to do this reduction in the current biennium, of which we're in the very first year of the biennium, the commissioners are asking for the time to be able to look at and analyze where can we reduce current operations or administrative budgets without severely impacting programs, rather than to make a snap judgment in a very short period of time and we're, you know, line out this program or whatever. That's what we're asking not to have to do. But when we come before you for fiscal year 6 and 7, that final decision of what programs will either be reduced or whatever will have been made after a very thoughtful process that we are asking that the committee chairs, for example, be included in that process and be aware of what they are so that we are all not caught by surprise again.
Representative Young.
Madam Chair, I don't know if the question was answered. Again, now I'm trying to figure out, so do we need to do anything this year then? If you're telling me that you're going to come back in January when you still have 6 months left in the current biennial budget, and then talk to us about where the reductions will occur, or will they have occurred already? Are you asking us to cut now, and then you'll report back in January as to what was cut? Are you asking us to wait till January, make the cut then, since we're still in the biennium, we can do it then too, and then you'll cut from January through June? Because that's the next time we'll be here to get information from you is January. So I'm not exactly sure what you're saying. Again, I reiterate the question, are you asking this committee to cut $497,000 without any specifics behind it yet? Are you asking us to do that this year or next January for the remainder of the year that'll be left when we come back?
Ms. Leshner.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, what we are asking, I need to answer this in two pieces because to me you're asking actually two questions. The very first question, which we are all dealing with, is what is the agency going to do in fiscal year five to reduce, as Chairman Harder said, the governor proposes and the legislature disposes, if I'm correct, what that figure is. At this particular point, the recommendation for the governor is a 3% for our operating budget. How do we do that, knowing what we've gone through in the last several years of budget reductions and the impact on all of us in this room, all of our constituents, all of our peers in agriculture and not in agriculture? How do we make those choices in a very short time? No, we're asking that, one, for the current biennium, we be challenged, empowered to make that decision where we can take reductions through savings in various areas, cost-saving measures, etc., that we could do that and not severely impact programs. So, yes, I am asking you to trust me for this current biennium to be able to do it through savings, not through program reductions. I'm not asking for that. I'm asking for through savings. In fiscal year 6 and 7, which is the next biennium, which we will be bringing before you next legislative session and asking for that budget, at that point, instead of being a one-year reduction of $497, it's going to be a biennial reduction of twice that amount. Can the agency continue to sustain that large of a reduction without impacting programs? And I think that's the question you're trying to get me to answer, and what I'm trying to answer for you is, knowing the sensitivity, knowing the interrelatedness, knowing the importance of our regulatory programs and our marketing efforts and various other efforts that we have on agriculture, we're asking you not to force us to make a snap judgment right now, but instead to be very thorough, very methodical, and very communicate with everybody. What are those options? So if we have an instance which is really not palatable to anybody, that everybody understands why that either should not be on the table or why it had to be on the table, so that there are no surprises like we had, for example, last year.
And Madam
That's
Chair,
what I'm asking.
Just finally, thank you for your time. I think I got the answer now, and I would hope that this committee takes a different approach to that. Really, the department is just asking us to cut and trust us to make those cuts that we need to. We take the budget away and they'll decide which programs get cut. And I feel like I'd be usurping my duty as a legislator and representative of 37,000 people out there to allow that to happen without oversight, and to at least have a bill in front of us and know exactly which program or which personnel or which salary is being cut or not filled, because that's, I think, our duty, Madam Chair. And I would not go along with the governor's speculative budget-cutting situation that was just described to us.
Well, Representative Junkie, I heard the witness indicate that there were some savings involved.
Savings, Madam Chair.
I heard the word. Some savings involved.
Well, they want $497,000 worth of savings, but we don't know what they're saving money on, because they can't tell us until next year after they implement the savings. So, for example, are they going to cut more money out of ag in classrooms? Are they going to cut? We don't know what the specific cuts are going to be till they come back next January and report where they cut after the fact. And I don't know that we've ever done that before in my 8 years. And you've been here longer than me. Do we just either give them money to spend or take money away without knowing what they're spending it on or what we're taking it away from, more specifically? I don't think we've ever done that. So,
Representative Blaine.
Well, just thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Junkie. I share your concern with this budget and with budget recommendations or shortcomings from the department. But when you mentioned, you know, savings, and the department had mentioned that there's a possibility of savings to address this issue for the rest of this biennium. I think when you mentioned, you know, are they going to cut egg in the classroom, is that savings? I think probably then we're probably looking at that as being a program reduction or a line item reduction. I guess I'm thinking the department, if they're looking at savings, is probably in positions that they don't have filled now that maybe they had looked at filling before that they just would not fill in as far as savings that way, or in whether it's in how they structure the rest of their personnel as far as savings or leave or things like that. But I'm hoping, and I think you probably share the same thought too, that the department, when they're talking about savings, is not looking at cutting programs and calling that savings. And I guess I'm gonna grant the department a little bit of leeway that way, in the fact that I think that they would recognize that difference between savings and program cuts there. And I guess we'll find out as we go forward. But $497,000 out of the Department of Ag's budget is, to me, a pretty substantial chunk of change. And any time we start to affect the workings and the efforts by the Department of Ag here in the state of Minnesota, I think everyone in this committee has to be concerned. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Tennant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two brief questions. First of all, the marketed inspection fee, the scale testing services, and those four things that you are going to increase fees on of 10%, are they things that you are currently doing?
Ms. Leshner.
Madam Chair, Representative Pena. On the marketing inspection, those are existing fees for services that we provide under the cooperative agreement outside of Minnesota state boundaries. That is in the cooperative. For the scale testing fees, those are fees that previously in Minnesota statutes were directed to be deposited in the Department of Public Service, who used to do those. They informed us that they would no longer be doing that scale testing function, and since we're first on the cooperative agreement, then we have to provide that. So we're going to provide that. We're asking for the authority to collect the fees and deposit it into our own account for the services that we're providing. For the phytosanitary, previously when the phytosanitary fees were general fund fees before it became a dedicated account, these were fees that had been set in rule. Again, we made, in rewriting the law, we missed this particular little piece. The rewritten law says the commissioner shall collect. It doesn't say the commissioner shall set. And so for these where we're not doing the full phytosanitary inspection, we're asking to actually be able to set a fee less than what is currently in law. And lastly, for the grain buyers and testing, this account is looking at, a fee increase of 10%. The fee increase is being caused by charges that are being passed on to us for representation through the Attorney General's office, for administrative law judges, etc., for different grain buyers and elevators that are actually having problems, and we are then now winding up having to go and utilize the bonds. So that's why both of those kind of go together. So that one, it truly is a fee increase. The other three, I wouldn't actually call them a fee increase.
Madam
Representative Hanna.
Madam Chair, and okay, I at least I got the one on the scale testing, it's just going from one department to the other. And I'll take your word that the other two aren't increased. So we got a 10% increase on the grain fees. Also, I heard in testimony that you wanted this, or at least some of it, moved from rule to statute. So this will be brought back to us. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Representative.
Ms. Lesner, you made reference to utilizing the bonds. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Madam Chair, I think Mr. Granewski is presented on that, which is another bill that we have, which is the grain buyer's bond. We're looking and asking that, since the bonds amount have not been changed since 1983, that we're asking add several higher bonds amount because the elevators out there in question actually have the value of the grain that they actually buy and sell is higher than the current bond limitations.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Granewski,
Ms. Lesner was referring to bond administration, when there's bond claims made against the grain buyer's bond or the grain storage bond, that elevators and other grain license bodies have, the department reviews the claims and makes a determination on the distribution of the bond. The parties that made claims against the bond can appeal the department's decision.
Excuse me 1 minute. I'm having trouble hearing the witness. Excuse me, Mr. Granewski.
Madam Chair, department determines the distribution of the bond. Claimants against the bond or the insurance company that issued the bond can appeal the department's decision. In that case, the Attorney General's office represents the department, and we have to pay the costs of the use of their attorneys, and then the department pays the cost of the administrative law judge and the hearings that are held in the case. So when Ms. Lesner was talking about the bond administration, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about when there's a claim against the bond, the department incurs the cost of determining the distribution of the bond and any appeals made on the department's determination.
Thank you, Mr. Ganeski. Ms. Lesner, could you give us an idea on these fee increases? How close we'll be coming to collecting the actual cost of the service the department is providing?
Madam Chair, in providing these numbers to the Department of Finance, we did a review, for example, on the Market Inspection Authority of what's our average of inspections that we are performing under the USDA delegation outside of Minnesota, and the average was about $10,000 a year, and we would be recovering the $10,000 that it will cost us to provide those services. These are really set at a cost recovery basis. They're the same fees that we also charge within the state of Minnesota. Again, the scale testing services, we're looking at being able to recover about $4,000 in revenue to the grain inspection account each year. And we're also expecting that to cost us about that to provide those services. Again, rather than to have two scale testing service fees, one for us and one for public service, we've instead opted for the option of adopting their scale testing fees for these same size scales. The plant protection exports, again...
So, excuse me, Ms. Lesner, how close is that to the actual cost of providing the service on the scale?
As Madam Chair, as I understand from staff that have analyzed this in this particular program area, what we're actually recovering is the cost of our inspectors' time to provide these services, and that is what we're looking for, is the cost recovery time for the time that it takes them, also for the equipment that we have to use to use that to perform those functions.
Okay.
Continuing?
Yes, please.
Continuing on the plant protection export certification, as Mr. Friso testified, we're looking at an increase of about $9,000 in revenue for all of these various certificates. And what we're looking for is the recovery of the staff time and doing the research and putting the certificates together. So again, it's a recovery of our time and effort. And then in the grain inspection fees, we're actually looking at an increase in revenue of about $54,000 a year, and that would be there to be available to cover the AG and the ALJ fees if we continue as we have with the past several years' experience.
Thank you, Ms. Leshner, for going through that. Do you have a further presentation?
Madam Chair, that concludes our presentation.
Any further questions for the department? Thank you, Ms. Leshner.
Thank you.
As the Board of Animal Health comes to the witness table, we'll officially call this hearing to order. A quorum is present. And you have before you the minutes of the Thursday, March 11th, 2004 meeting. Representative Finstead, would you care to move the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Finstead moves the approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? If not, we'll vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment to the minutes are adopted. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hartman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Always a pleasure.
Would you care to proceed?
I would like to. For the record, my name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the State Veterinarian. Just to remind you as a start, the mission of the Board of Animal Health is to protect the domestic animals of the state of Minnesota and to be part of the team that protects the public health. The board's current budget for this biennium is $5,606,000 or $2,803,000 a year. The governor's supplemental budget would call for a 3% reduction, permanent reduction of our budget. And that would start in fiscal year 2005, and that 3% would be $84,000. As we're planning for budget reductions, what we try to do at the Board of Animal Health is maintain our core functions. I mentioned that the reason we exist is to protect the health of the domestic animals of the state, maintain a staff of animal health professionals, and lastly, maintain our current disease control and eradication programs. You've probably heard in the news recently about chronic wasting disease, BSE, and avian influenza or bird flu. These diseases are not causing problems in Minnesota, but they're getting a lot of media attention. There are concerns in other parts of the world and other parts of the country. The board's resources are really taxed because of these disease problems that occur, not so much that we're actually doing something with these diseases in Minnesota, but responding to citizens' concerns and also responding to the media. So we've been very busy lately. The way that we've dealt with these budget reductions at the board in a time when our resources are being taxed even further is to increase our cooperative efforts with a partner that we have in animal disease control, and that is USDA APHIS Veterinary Services. That is the organization within the United States Department of Agriculture that you probably have heard Ron DeHaven speak about BSE in the news. He's the chief veterinarian for that group. We work with them very closely. Most of the disease control programs that we have here in Minnesota are national disease control programs. So we've increased our participation with that group because of the budget cuts here in Minnesota. The way we've done that is two different things. One is we've transferred some of the surveillance programs for animal diseases in Minnesota to the USDA office here in Minnesota. So for diseases such as brucellosis in cattle, tuberculosis in cattle, diseases that we've eliminated from Minnesota but that haven't been eliminated from the United States, we've moved them administratively over to the USDA office so that instead of the Board of Animal Health monitoring these diseases, the USDA office is doing it. The second way that we've dealt with the budget reductions at a time when we really have an increased demand for our services is in signing cooperative agreements with the same group of people. So there are diseases that are important nationwide as well as here in Minnesota. Yoni's disease is an example, BSE. We've signed cooperative agreements with USDA in which they provide funding to the Board of Animal Health to work on the programs cooperatively. And lastly, we're always trying to become more efficient at the Board of Animal Health. It's a challenge to daily try and find new ways that we can do our business in a time when there are budget reductions without reducing our what we supply to the citizens of Minnesota. Madam Chair, that's the end of my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Hartman. Are there any questions? Representative Otto and Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I heard you talking about that, you know, there's a suggested budget reduction to your board and that you do provide services to the state and you've been able to do some more with USDA to help you with your duties. And efficiencies are very good. I'm just wondering, because we all strive for that. It's important to do that and to look for new and innovative ways to do things. I guess my question for you is, at the point that you're at, and I'm sure you'll do all that you can to find more efficiencies if possible, is there a point at which there is just service reduction or your ability to address as many things might be reduced?
Dr. Hartman.
Madam Chair and Representative Otto, certainly working in the way we are in the times of budget problems, there are trade-offs. When we sign cooperative agreements with USDA and they provide funding to us, they're telling us we develop a work plan for that funding. So the federal government is telling us how we need to spend that money. So, for instance, if we get a cooperative agreement for Yoni's disease with federal government, they dictate that that money has to be spent on Yoni's disease. It can't be spent on other things, and they approve the work plan. So we have a little less input on our disease control programs if we work in that manner. To answer your question about will there come a point at which we, if you continue to reduce our budget, we wouldn't be able to deliver the services, it's possible. Certainly so far the funding that we've gotten from the federal government has filled that gap. That funding is only guaranteed for a year. So when we get these cooperative agreements, they last a year and then we have to renew them.
Representative Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Hartman, you're talking about an $84,000 reduction. Are you doing that in some way other than staff, or is there some staff involved here? I was just wondering what, you know, what you're doing to achieve the $84,000.
Dr. Hartman.
Which way it's, or any, whatever you can tell us.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Swenson, as I mentioned, the board has been fortunate during these budget problems of signing some of these cooperative agreements with the federal government, so we have not had to lay off personnel at this point. We don't anticipate any reduction in personnel or programs with the reduction of 3%.
Any further questions of Dr. Hartman? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to recall Mr. Bozicki. Mr. Bozicki, I understand there's another issue that needs to be covered.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In the governor's bill, there is a provision that repeals, at our request, Minnesota Statutes 18C.433. That is a program that's called the Private Manure Applicator Certification Program. It was brought about as a result of the, I believe it was a 2000 legislative session, and it was put into effect
for implementation in January of 2005. The department was required to do a report on this, and we did a report submitted to the legislature in 2001. Very simply, it was a program that was not funded by the legislature. There was no appropriations for it, and it requires the department to develop a program to license anyone who wishes to become private manure applicator or certify them. Madam Chair, as you know, we do have a commercial certificate or licensing program right now to license commercial applicators. So it was modeled after that and after our private pesticide applicator program. Having said all that, the bottom line is that we are looking at implementation costs of about $100,000. At the time we did the report in 2001, we were also looking at a tremendous amount of support from Minnesota Extension. And Madam Chair, our recommendation is to repeal this language or to delete the language so that we would not have to implement this program. A few things have changed since 2001 when we did the report. One is there is a tremendous amount of EQIP money that is currently coming into the state. And the other thing is there has been a very significant acceptance and promotion of commercial manure applicators. So we anticipate that a lot of that need would be fulfilled through the federal money coming in for manure management plans and also through commercial applicators. So we'd be happy to visit with you or answer any questions, but that's basically our concern. I would make note that we've talked with the Pollution Control Agency, and rather than a deletion, they would actually like the language in 18C.433 to be modified to delay the implementation of the requirement that all manure needs to be either commercially applied or needs to have a manure management plan to 2006 rather than 2005. And Madam Chair, this is for operations with 300 animal units or more, so that is the only size of operation, 300 to 1,000 animal units that would be affected by this. Madam Chair, if you've got any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Any questions of Mr. Bezicki? Representative Heidgerken.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a copy of the statute here, and I'm always leery about that. So basically what you're saying for, and there's some small operators at 300 animal units, this is actually going to give them an extension of another year to meet the planning requirements of the MPCA.
Madam Mr. Chair, Representative Heidgerken, that is correct. Although the way in the governor's budget we currently have the whole section, the language repealed, but we've talked with the Pollution Control Agency and they have suggested, rather than repealing, delay the planning until 2006. You're correct. That would give growers a little bit more time to deal with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions of the witness? Not. Thank you, Mr. Bezicki.
Okay, Madam Chair. Thank you for recalling me.
There being no further business, this hearing is adjourned.